puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, that music can only mean one thing. Time for a visit with our Manitoba historian, Gordon Goldsborough. He joins me now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Sarah.
So the last time you were in, there was a hint with Lori about talking about a site near rivers where it's an essential fuel for early rail transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more.
Well, if you think about what it took to move a locomotive in the old days, you know, I'm thinking one of the old steam trains, you needed two things. You needed to burn a fuel, and so wood perhaps would be one of the fuels. But of course, here on the prairies where there weren't many trees, wood was a tough thing to come across. So they started using coal. So that was a very common fuel. But the other thing you needed was the water to make the steam. So you had to have water. And that, too, is a bit of a problem on the prairies, because if, particularly if you get out into Saskatchewan, a lot of the water is quite salty, and that makes it a real problem. So the railway engineers were always looking for good sources of water because they needed that in order to run the steam locomotives. So our site today hooks into that water theme.
And that was where some of the hint was, because it was in
rivers. Yes.
Right. So carry on. What's the secret story today?
Okay. Well, if you think about then how do you get a reliable supply of water? One way is that if you don't have a lot at any one time, you store what you do have and use it then when you don't have it readily elsewhere at other times. So there are often water towers that you would see in various towns. In fact, most towns that had a railway would have a water tower. They've mostly gone now because, of course, we have transitioned away from steam locomotives. So to my knowledge, there's really only two of these water towers left in Manitoba. There's one in Winnipeg Beach. It's one from the 1920s. And the oldest one, at least the one that I know of, is the one that's in Clearwater. The one in Clearwater dates back to 1903. But every town would have had one, or they would have had what rivers had, which was a natural sort of storehouse of water in the water held up behind a dam.
And how would they get the water to the train, though?
Well, they'd have to pump it. In fact, at rivers, for example, the town is a little higher than the river, so it wouldn't flow naturally from the river up to the town. You'd have to pump it. And that's why then the other part of the equation, besides the dam, to hold the water, you need a pump house to pump it up the hill to the town where the locomotive is sitting waiting for its water.
And I assume this pump house is part of our journey today?
That's right. Of course, we are talk about abandoned places here in this series. And of course, the dam is abandoned in the sense that it's gone. I mean, there are remnants of it. You can certainly see what probably happened is at some point there was a major flood, perhaps one spring, that just couldn't be held back and it destroyed the dam. But there are still remnants along the edges of the banks, the old wooden staves of the dam itself. And then the pump house is still there. Now, there isn't much evidence of the pumping function. It's a building, and you can see that it obviously had a lot of electricity being used in it. They probably used electrical pumps because there's a big power line into it. The power line is no longer in service. But inside, there's all the mounts, and you know the floor is not even at all. It's got a whole bunch of little holes and depressions where they would have had all this machinery, and that's where they had the big pumps to pump the water up the hill.
Is it still open? Could people go inside it, or is it...
I went inside it. there's no real door on it. The windows are all gone, so you don't have to really work hard to get inside. And it's kind of an inconspicuous place. I had to actually look for it. In fact, I have to give a bit of a shout out to a friend in Brandon, a historian by the name of Ken Story. Ken was the one that drew my attention to it, because without Ken, I don't know that I would have even found the place. But it's certainly there, sitting right beside the Little Saskatchewan River.
And you wonder how long it'll be before nobody knows what that building was.
Well, that's why I like to think that this project is helping preserve a lot of this stuff, because by putting points on maps, it might let people know that, you know, 50 years from now that, oh, that little building, that thing was part of the big transition of railways.
And do people ever, is there evidence that people have been unkind to this building?
Yeah. Well, inevitably vandalism occurs. If you go inside it, for example, you'll see these graffiti tags all sprayed along the walls. I mean, at least the building is still standing. I mean, it is a wood building, so you could imagine that someone perhaps could by now have torched it. That hasn't happened yet. But no, unfortunately, that like a lot of places that are unoccupied, it's been thoroughly, you know, graffitied.
Right. Are there many pump houses left in Manitoba, do you think?
I don't think so. I know, and it's because I think partly they didn't necessarily need them. If they had a ready source of water. I've only come across one other one near Austin. And in fact, that one, you have really no evidence of what it was. There's the foundation of the building for the pump house. And it was only because I had a fellow who knew the site tell me that that's what it had been. Otherwise, I certainly wouldn't have known. So, no, as far as I know, this is the only sort of fairly substantial remnants of an old pump house that goes back, in this case, a very long ways. 1910 is when this building was built. So it's over 100 years old.
And it's mostly wood?
Stone on the floor? It's on a concrete floor.
Yeah.
But it's mostly wood, yeah.
Yeah. So what railway was it that operated the pump house to work out of?
Well, it was one that's no longer in existence, one called the Grand Trunk Pacific, and it later became part of the CN, Canadian National. But the Grand Trunk Pacific was developed as sort of an alternative to the other major railway at the time, which was the Canadian Pacific. They started from Portage-la-Prairie, and they were going to build a line out across the prairies, kind of diagonally sort of northwest towards, ultimately to Edmonton. And what's interesting about that particular line, they sometimes call the Alphabet Railway, because the individual stations were named for letters of the alphabet. Yeah. So you start out at Portage-la-Prairie, and the first station was Arona, A, then Bloom, B, K, C, and went D, E, F, so on. So when you get up to the area around Rivers, you have stations like, well, listeners may remember the concrete grain elevator I mentioned the other day, Quadra. Well, that was Q on the Alphabet Railway. You get past that, and then you get a station called Ray, R-E-A. And most people probably wouldn't have even heard of that because, well, it's nothing anymore. There's nothing at Ray for the R. In fact, what the plan was originally, they were going to have a divisional point there. There were going to be mechanic shops and administrative offices. Ray was going to be a big town. And then they had a big problem. No water. So there's that other hook again, because they really needed water for the steam locomotives. So they moved it to Rivers instead.
You think they would have figured that out beforehand?
You'd think.
Wait a minute.
Well, I think they probably had to do this all very quickly. So
right.
That was part of the motivation, I guess.
Right. But then things changed.
Oh, absolutely. We think about the time going into the 1950s, we start seeing fewer and fewer steam locomotives. In fact, most of the Canadian railways had made the transition by the late 1950s to diesel-powered locomotives. So the necessity for a facility like the one in Rivers, the pump house and the dam really wasn't there anymore. And so that's what really spelled the end for this little pump house is the transition to diesel. And of course, we have romantic notions of the old days of steam locomotives, the trains chuffing along, with their whistles. And of course, that all's different now with the diesels because they don't have that same sort of noise. And so we've lost something, I think. But it's interesting because if any Winnipeggers, for instance, are going through Assiniboine Park, they may notice that there's a big steam locomotive sitting there. And that has the distinction of being the last steam locomotive to run in Manitoba. And that's sort of a symbol of that transition from steam power to diesel power.
Interesting. Okay, so Terry's back with you next week, but we have to leave Terry with a bit of a hint. What are we going to tell him?
Well, this one has a complex lead up. Listeners may recall that a few weeks ago, I talked about the lakes at Fort White Alive, the former quarries for clay, and I described them as cement ponds. And then I riffed on that theme the next week and talked about a concrete grain elevator run by Manitoba Pool. So it was a concrete pool. Well, next week, we're going to go back to that theme again for concrete pool. But this time, I mean it literally. And there are soldiers swimming in the pool.
Well, now I'm putting my thinking cap on. Jan and I are looking at each other across the mirror going, Thanks so much for this. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Sarah.
Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks very much.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.